We are working on bringing the government meeting on telecoms to you. We're having some technical difficulties, but in the meantime, we have lots of good music lined up for you
on how telecommunications and changes in technology might transform the Falklands, its businesses, its society. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about questions and responding to what's going to be presented. We're going to plan on about 25 minutes to 30 minutes of presenting, and then there will be an open question and answer session, which will be compared by Simon Bradshaw, who's at the back, who will be asking you to introduce yourselves before you give your question via a microphone, just to make sure that everyone can hear. So get your thinking caps on. And in the meantime, I will hand over to Tim Passingham, Chairman of Cambridge MC. Thank you.
Becky, thank you very much indeed, and thank you for coming this evening. Thank you more broadly for your incredible hospitality on the islands. This has been our second trip here. We'll talk a little bit more about that shortly. But we've had quite a few of the Cambridge team here, really trying to get under the skin of both the current challenges, but what else you need moving forward from a telecoms perspective on the island. So last time we were here in October and November, Erling was here for 3 weeks along with Tom Burton from our team on the cybersecurity and resilience side of things, Steve Tunnicliffe on the satellite side of things, and myself. And then this time Clive has come to support Erling with the future telecoms work. As Becky said, we're very focused in this session on what comes in future. And so we've got a few slides just to sort of whet your appetite and kind of get the questions moving. But the key thing, as Becky said, is really getting your feedback. What are some of the things that you want to make sure that we are thinking about that we may not have sort of captured in some of our one-to-one meetings, meetings with chambers of commerce, other business groups, and other people in the islands. We've spent a lot of time really trying to understand what the needs are, but we'd love to get your feedback, particularly now in this forum and in the Q&A moving forward. Let me introduce the team again. So Erling Arendsveen here, in the pink shirt for those of you on radio, has been leading our project and leading all the activity. He's probably met most of you in the room over the time that he's been here. And then supporting Erling is Clive, both senior partners in our business, in our TMT sector, which is telecoms, media and technology. And that's how we structure our business on the telecom side of things. And Erling's going to talk first a little bit and share a bit about the survey that we did. You took a lot of time, a lot of people put a lot of time and effort into filling that in. So he's going to share a bit more about that now. Okay, Erling, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for that kind introduction, and to Becky's also. It's been an absolute privilege to do this work, and I thought we would start with the survey. So we put out a survey in November, which we had a massive response to. We had over 600 households responding to the survey, which was very, very helpful to us. And huge thanks for doing that. I presume most of you in this room answered this survey. It confirmed a lot of the interviews and the suspicions we had about service quality and the perception of telecoms. I'm not going to go into the survey in detail. It's just this is just to provide you with the general feedback. It basically tells you what you already knew. And yes, thank you. It was very, very helpful. What is happening on telecoms? So I'm going to speak about something called submarine fiber system, and then I'm going to hand over to back to Tim on satellite stuff. So this is the world. This is probably one of the most important maps of the internet for the entire world. This is a map of all the submarine fiber optic cables that lie in our oceans and carries 99% of all the internet traffic of the world. 99%. Everything goes on these cables. There are billions and billions of pounds being invested every year in new systems. Last one, Meta did 45,000 kilometers long around the Horn of Africa and back up again to Marseille. that's a longer cable than around the earth. These cables carry all traffic, and as the arrow suggests, that is one of the issues here. You are very far away from any of these cable systems. The nearest big hub here is basically up in Montevideo or in Sao Paulo. Yeah, satellite.
I guess the other point I would make just on the subsea briefly is, you know, there are a number of projects. There is activity that's taking place towards the South Atlantic. So we are hopeful that at some point in future you will be able to get some connectivity there. But in the meantime, obviously something that's exercised a huge amount of your time and thinking, in fact, to the extent that the new Cambridge Management Consulting recruitment policy for satellite experts is pretty much going to be focused on the Falklands, given the amount of knowledge that some of you have gleaned on the subject. But there's an enormous amount of activity happening in the market. You know some of this. You've put a huge amount of time and effort into understanding the things that can affect your market here, particularly on the Starlink side of things. But there's an awful lot more happening than just what's going on in the Starlink side of the world. You obviously heard more about OneWeb last week, so there's been some progress there, which is good. And they're now working very hard to catch up after having a pretty rocky start in the LEO world, not just here, but internationally, which is some good progress. But there's a huge amount of activity elsewhere, just in terms of the number of different low Earth orbit providers and the amount of money that's going into space and low Earth orbit satellite technology at the moment. You may have seen today, Ofcom in the UK has licensed additional UK spectrum to enable direct cell to satellite calling. And I'll come back to this in a minute because it's another opportunity that will present itself in the relatively near future and be both an opportunity and a threat to many in the Falkland Islands. But we think predominantly a quite a large opportunity. On the satellite side of things, again, you know, you've seen this from some of your research and activity, but in the LEO world, there are a huge plethora of different entrants into the market. You know, most of your attention has been focused rightly on Starlink, which is well ahead of the game. OneWeb, which is older, and now trying to catch up with aspects of Starlink's provision, but in a very different way, much more focused on business to business generally, rather than business to consumer. But if you look at the others that are work in progress, Project Kuiper from Amazon is really moving quite quickly indeed. And this year will start to have an impact, and we'll see the first Kuiper customers. And hopefully, you know, we're very hopeful that that'll be a further option for the Falklands in future. And it's certainly something we're watching quite closely for your benefit, as I'm sure many are in your community as well, in terms of a future option. AST Space Mobile has been in the news recently for doing a lot of work with Vodafone, particularly in Europe. They've done the first video call out of Wales recently. They've set up a joint venture in Spain to really move the kind of cell to satellite activity further forward. Telesat, the Canadians, there's others like Link, Rividium, and a few others in the market. Whether there's enough capital to support all of these will be interesting to see. And it'll be interesting to see the investor appetite in a geopolitically more challenging environment moving forwards. But there is a huge amount of activity here. So, you know, it's not just about Starlink today. It's about a whole low Earth orbit and new satellite dimension, which, whether subsea cables, you know, land here eventually or not, will give you a lot more options. Your satellite connectivity today outside of OneWeb is not hugely resilient, as you know. Aside from the round trip delay and the speed, and the range of those systems is not great. This starts to de-risk that enormously. It presents, you know, far more opportunity than just Starlink, which is good and something to look forward to, and something to think about. How do you make the most of? Erling talked about subsea. We spend a lot of time doing terrestrial fibre networks, particularly in UK, Europe and the US, and the boundaries are blurring. You know, when I was working for BT sort of 10, 15 years ago, everyone was talking about satellite being dead and the terrestrial network fibre being, you know, really everything that was focused on. Obviously, it's quicker, it is better. One of the things that we're thinking through really quite carefully is how do you fibre Stanley in future in a cost-effective way and get investment for that, because we think that's something that will make a massive difference here, whether Shaw do that or somebody else. But the boundaries between satellite and terrestrial are blurring. They will continue to blur, and primarily for your benefit, actually, and to add some opportunities in future. I've talked about the direct-to-satellite. So there's numerous different acronyms and language used for this at the moment, and the two main ones are direct-to-device or MSS, mobile satellite services. But the ability for your iPhone or other phone to connect directly to the satellite, there's a number of different environments where this will have an impact. It's not new. I mean, you're using Iridium, which is more traditional satellite technology today already. You're using push-to-talk for the emergency services. So it's not new. It's new in a low Earth orbit capacity. And so Starlink will launch this, pretty much first on a mass scale halfway through this year, and the other.
Common FTTP networks today are all rolling out with technology that gives 10 gigabits, which is far more than people generally are using around the world, but it gives that headroom for the next tens of years. So that's one key component. And then obviously exploiting LEO services, particularly in remote areas, is very complementary in all countries. And then working out the role of mobile for voice and data appropriately as well. And we were talking about the Scandinavian model, where the universal service obligation in a lot of the Nordics and Scandinavian countries is mobile, because they mandate having a very high degree of coverage so people have that safety of voice and data communications in quite lowly populated areas. So we think those global standards are the absolute aspiration out of all of this for the Falkland Islands. Which would mean, compared to some of the infrastructure today, quite a significant step up, through a couple of generations of technology. But that's very much got to be, where we aspire to get this to as quickly as possible. And then we start to look at, what are the use cases that are starting to exploit that type of connectivity, along with, new software technologies like AI, we all hear the buzz about, various digital technologies. Education is one that's starting to emerge, and we felt there was, from some of the feedback we've had, there's a couple of specific uses here where it can give people choice about where they get more education. So having to geographically relocate for periods of time to get certain types of education, they could have a choice to do some of that education and stay at home, and that's quite important. Second one was digital health. We've seen a lot of this in countries trying to address the cost of health, but also, the reach of health, and that feels highly applicable here. One family member had robotic surgery, and it's a step away from someone having robotic surgery and the surgeon. I mean, robotic surgery now, the surgeon sits sort of in a room next to the patient, looking at a screen. There's no reason why that surgeon, if you've got a machine, can't be thousands of miles away if you've got very low latency, high speed connectivity, and that those sort of things are emerging, as well as having access to consultations of specialists around the world, and as well as monitoring. My parents have some monitoring and sensing around the homes, and when one of them falls over, we find out, and those things are emerging. And I think particularly if you're in remote locations like in camp, they can help de-risk some of the sort of challenges for living in more remote environments. Digital government, obviously we have to talk about digital government. There is, as ever, an ambition to make government more cost effective, make it easier to deal with, to be able to do things remotely, and actually also get access to information, and that all requires connectivity and having data captured and stored and curated in a safe way for people to access. And when those connectivity options come, that rapidly tends to evolve. And then finally, you know, obviously quite specific here, but, you know, it's such a major industry, but there are quite a lot of examples of how particularly things like AI are, you know, measuring sizes of catches, auto counting, stock management, validating qualities and volumes, which helps speed up the supply chain, which creates more value. And that those things are emerging around the world, and there's no reason why they can't be accessed here. They all require really good connectivity. But as Tim said, you know, there's quite a step change in satellite technology, which will provide more capacity than I imagine the island can use for a number of years. So there should be a lot of headroom in this. So they were just some specific examples. I believe we're now going to go to questions, and I think our able assistant, Steve, has a roving microphone.
Right, thank you. Opportunity to mention after the session, really don't want to kind of have to deal with questions to do with current piece at the whole filing of the session in the future. We will try to go lengthen those other questions. There was only one question set which we had online, which was Starlink and the gigabit system, which they've announced. Obviously, that's all very new. That's about issues in technology. I will answer those directly on email, obviously with changes and also all that. So, if anyone has any questions, if you just put your hand up, we'll go around like hand up the right, and please put your name, and then
I think it's the obvious question. This is wonderful, spectacular. Who's going to pay for it? What's the business model for this?
I think here that's likely to be the case moving forward. Obviously, the aspiration is for telecoms to be funded by the community. It's a service that makes a fair return. It does in most markets. The challenge here is always volume, and there is that trade-off between the size of the market and the opportunity in getting companies to come here. But the aspiration is absolutely for it to be commercially viable in all respects and not to be something that the government has to fund centrally. And that's certainly our focus, is making sure that we're using the most efficient or recommending the most efficient technologies and getting the right blend of those technologies so that it can be self-funding as far as possible without needing either extra government subsidies or other extra funding. Is that helpful? If Simon will allow you. Do you mind saying who you are? Sorry. Great. Nice to meet you. Absolutely. So, I mean, there's numerous models out there. We've worked with many. So we've done work in the Cayman Islands recently, which is pretty much all commercially funded because of the size and the number of businesses there. We're doing work in the Turks and Caicos Island at the moment. That's a mixture of government funding and local for some of that activity. I think you've looked very closely at the often used, but I'm not sure always great comparison of Ascension Island and St. Helena. I'm not sure those markets, either commercially or because of the population, are a particularly good analogy for the Falklands. The Falklands is pretty unique. You know, as you saw from Erling's slide, you know, the lack of subsea cable connectivity, which is the most cost-effective way of getting any data to a particular location, is missing here. And so the Falklands is quite rare in the, you know, the remoteness of it, and the fact that it's not easy to connect for geopolitical reasons to the nearest land mass. So the Falklands is pretty unique, to be honest. So I would caution, I mean, we are obviously looking and have looked at other models. We're taking the bits of those that we think work here, but really you need something that's actually tailored for these islands, not somebody trying to take a model from Cayman Islands, St. Helena, Ascension, you know, Chagos Islands, Jersey, Guernsey, Isle of Man, and forcing it on this community. It's a very different community. It's smaller by population. It's actually wealthier than some. You know, your industry is quite broad with some particular kind of focus areas like fishing, etc., potentially oil and gas in the future, whereas other islands are very different. They're either focused very much on tourism, like Turks and Caicos, or financial services and legal, in the case of Cayman. So you really are quite unique. So I think you need the right thing for the Falkland Islands, not somebody else's model forced upon you. That's my perspective anyway. I don't know, Becky, if there's anything you'd want to add. Okay, great questions. Thank you very much.
Your microphone is not working.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yes. Anne Tewson, I'm just a member of public. But it's sort of a follow-on from the previous question. The problem that seems to face Shore, and I'm not getting into the politics of Shore, but the practical problems that seem to face Shore all seem to boil down to economies of scale and the fact that this is a very small population, a very small subscriber base. And providing a terrestrial-based solution for even more remote places, i.e. everything outside of Stanley, becomes prohibitively expensive and inevitably has to be subsidised by the income that's made from the larger community in Stanley. Is technology moving towards a solution that can be totally satellite-based for those remote communities so that there isn't the need for these very expensive ground-based rebroadcast, you know, piggyback systems to get the signal from here? Is there a system where, you know, the telephones, etc., eventually can just be straight to satellite so that there isn't the need for this ground-based infrastructure? Because even if in the ideal world, if a subsea cable came to the Falklands, it still wouldn't solve the problem of the remote communities out on the west, because they would never be connected to that cable.
So the first short answer to one of the questions is yes. So I'm conscious we moved very quickly because we only have an hour in total, but the direct-to-satellite cell connectivity is absolutely coming. So it will be possible in camp, particularly on West Falkland, if you want to run completely off satellite in future. But
there is direct-to-cell. Would that work indoors? I presume it would. But
it's unlikely to. You get about 10 decibel loss when you go into a car indoor.
So that doesn't solve the problem of the domestic.
Correct.
Telephone.
Correct. No, that's a basic physics. You need to see the satellite. But there's no reason if your Starlink or your OneWeb terminal or in future your Kuiper terminal that's on your roof, which is seeing the satellite, can't be used for WhatsApp voice calling or when you're in the house, pretty much everything you need to do on your mobile outside. With many of these things, there's a trade-off. You know, there is no one magic bullet or panacea here. It is a trade-off in technology. So to go back to your other question, you know, could camp be run entirely off satellite? Very soon, yes, it could. But there's some buts here. You know, you already have got quite a lot of military infrastructure and therefore the need to have some cable and microwave connectivity to west of Falkland. You already actually, one of the really good aspects of Shore's infrastructure we've seen that they're currently upgrading is the microwave backhaul network. That's based on high-quality Israeli equipment. It's very well run. It's a good backbone network. So would you want to scrap that and rely just on satellite if you can use that for some of the connectivity that's already in camp? They're the sort of things we're thinking about. And that's where we talk to, you know, people like Brian, who sat here, who, you know, who know that well and have given us some really good feedback for our report. And some of these things are also not a, we switch it all off now and move to this thing immediately. Some of these things, particularly if you take, say, the copper network in camp. So we interviewed a few families in San Carlos and spent some time with them understanding how they use technology, combination of satellite, different satellites, actually Iridium and the landline network. They're actually using the copper network still quite extensively. So would you want to switch that off straight away if it still works and still adds value and is still there? I'm not sure you would. Even though it's being switched off in most of the rest of the world, I'm not sure you'd want to switch that off straight away. Same for FM radio. You know, resilience is, and you know, you've really got to think about the defence of these islands. And that's not something you've got to think about in Jersey, Guernsey or the Isle of Man. But here, you've got to think about the defence of the islands and things that you may have to fall back on in an emergency. Some of that is much more traditional telecoms and things that are very reliable if satellites have been knocked out of the sky, subsea cables have been cut, you know, other such threat actors have been at work. You guys know that more than any island community, probably anywhere in the world. And so things like the radio infrastructure and leaving FM in place, possibly for longer than other island communities or other parts of the world would do that, are quite important considerations for this community. So, you know, so there are some nuances, which I think may be sort of part of your question. Does that answer enough of your question? Are there a... Yeah, okay. All right, thank you. It's a good question. Silence. Go on, Brian. You can see he's almost...
Thanks, Simon. People maybe already know my name. I'm Brian Jameson from South Harbour. Nice to meet you, Tim. When Simon dropped a message to me, he said that he's wanting this to concentrate on the opportunities with Falklands. My background has actually been in developing software that works over the internet. So a lot of people commonly call that over-the-top services. I had spoken and tried some proof of concepts. Some folk will remember back in the day 2-meter darts competitions all around the islands. We tried doing something like that with a collaboration server. It worked quite well. It wasn't powerful enough. The connectivity wasn't good enough to allow me to offer that all around the islands, but it would be awesome to be able to do that one day. There's a couple of things that I would like to see happen. I'm hoping for better hotspot-type connectivity so that places like the jetty centres, tea shops, cafes, restaurants can basically allow customers to have that connectivity to upload their penguin photos to the families. We've spoken a little bit about mobiles. I've been trying to get Wi-Fi calling for mobiles, but basically anything direct to satellite, so on, that is going to be a huge, huge benefit when you're doing online shopping and someone wants to send you a confirmation text message that you need to type in numbers and maybe not do that in 12 hours' time. I've always thought for the Falklands camp education, we should be world beating. Everyone should come and say, how do you do it? So I would really hope that we can focus not just on the spaghetti, not just on the connectivity, but also on the applications that help children to go through that education. And finally, I think having that reliability of connectivity, it's seriously important to be able to comfort families and friends when you're perhaps having to go through a vigil. It's something I've had to go through. It's something I know other people have had to do. It's painful on Friday evening when your connection drops and you know that's it for the weekend. It sucks.
There's quite a lot in there. There's some good feedback. I think my initial feedback is there's a great list. A lot of that, I think, I would hope when you see some of our output, because quite a bit of that will be published, you know, we're ticking all of those boxes in with respect to what the future infrastructure needs to look like and the applications it needs to deliver. Education and health are obviously critical. We've spent a lot of time with the heads of both of those departments. I was spending some time with Sarah this weekend on the hills actually talking about it. You know, I know they're thinking about it a lot. You know, the example of the CT scanner. I know Matt Mitchell's team have been doing a lot of work to fix that as well and make sure the education system has got the tech it needs to be able to serve those remote communities. I think there's a way to go, definitely. There's some policy and other changes that we need to make. It's crazy that children have been staying up so late to get free access to connectivity, and that's something that I think is starting to change, but certainly needs to be forced to be changed quite quickly. The new unlimited packages that Shore have announced, I think, will be a big stepping stone to doing that. That's something we've encouraged a lot behind the scenes and probably needs to be taken a step further in future as well. I thought all of those things are great things. The Wi-Fi hotspots, we've flagged many of that. The Wi-Fi infrastructure, both in most of your homes, most of your businesses, and in public areas, whether it's Mount Pleasant, in the waiting area, whether it's on the jetty, you know, most of that Wi-Fi infrastructure is frankly ancient and needs upgrading. That's just a statement of the obvious. You know, in the full fibre world of developed markets, where Erling talked about fibre that runs over something called XGS-PON, point of passive optical network, and that's what Shore run in Guernsey, for example, XGS-PON. Wi-Fi 7 is geared up to work at 10 gigs. You know, that's the world that we're kind of in right now, which is Wi-Fi 7. You know, most of the routers here that we've seen have been sort of third or fourth generation. So even getting up to kind of Wi-Fi 5 and 6 speeds in itself will have a big difference here and help communities. So there's some really obvious quick wins. We actually had a session this morning with FIG where we were looking at the quick wins that can be delivered in parallel to the future, because none of you want to wait 2 years for some of these improvements. You've seen lots of improvements in the last few years, but you want to see a lot more in the next 2 years. You don't want to wait for some of those things you mentioned are frankly hygiene factors and things that you need. But, let's hope not. We desperately hope not. We've not spent enough time together, and I've not been to South Harbour yet, so you can't go soon.
Good evening. Andrew Newman, member of the public and the business manager, Echo, whoever was it, thank you for coming along this evening. I'd like to come back up a little bit out of the weeds, if you will, because we could all tell stories till dawn tomorrow about our experiences of what's wrong today, and I'm hoping that you've encapsulated that in all your work anyway. I'm more concerned, I'm assuming you're operating to a set of terms of reference from FIG for this, which obviously members of the public or the business community haven't seen, so we're not sure where that heads. You give some indication. I'm more concerned that the recommendations, regardless of the technologies, and despite Phil's concerns, regardless of the cost at the outset, are showing the Falklands a very clear picture of what you called that headroom. And I say that because we are sitting on the back of the best part of two decades failing to do that with the systems we have in place of having legacy satellite links, etc. We have always aimed way too low, been negotiated too low, and then had to scrabble through a decade to try and get something. So my main question for you is, do the terms of reference ensure that you are going to put forward recommendations that will give that headroom, whatever technology, going forward?
I'll snap up. I'll
go and
answer this one.
Doing a good
job.
Yeah, get my stats in.
The terms of round very happily.
Zach Reichel, Development Corporation. All the slides that you put up with regard to what could be offered appear to indicate a plurality of services. So are you suggesting, or is Cambridge coming to the conclusion that in spite of the Falklands size and relative distance to everywhere else, that a traditional telecom operator could exist while the market allows for choice based on preference?
The short answer to both your questions from my perspective is yes. You know, in the survey, in the conversations with you, there are two key things that are coming out constantly, is that the population wants choice, and it is balancing that with, you know, what is affordable, to your question at the beginning, and what is achievable in a in this geography and with a population of this size. But I think, you know, from some of the other comments and Brian, your feedback and list, it is obvious that, you know, different technologies in the world that's emerging are going to be needed to solve different applications and the differing communities in Stanley versus Camp. And so we think choice is going to be key to that, and we think non-exclusivity is key to that. You know, to both your question and the previous one, how you deliver long-term headroom is not just a technological, how much bandwidth is there so that the Facebook of the future or the TikTok of the future is going to have the physical network bandwidth to operate. It's actually more about a commercial structure such that, you know, there aren't things that discourage competition and new tech from coming here. And that's where the previous legislation and contract has been caught out. You know, there are very good reasons that exclusivity was put in place in the past. And I think if the MLAs from 10 years ago were here, they would talk through that if they haven't to many of you privately. But where we're at now, we're in a world where the technology is far more plural, whether it's your individual device choice, you know, which is enormous. Even here in Shaw's shop, your device choice for a mobile is actually pretty large. You know, internationally, it's enormous. So how do you create the commercial environment where there is always an incentive for competition that's going to drive innovation? And that's the real headroom that will provide opportunity for businesses to flourish, to adopt the all aspects of the digital economy. So we're looking at this both commercially as well as technically. Almost the most important thing is the commercial structure rather than the technical side of things. Does that answer the question, Zach? Cool. Thank you.
All right. I think as I say, this isn't the end of the opportunity for questions. You can email Simon, you can speak to Tim, Clive and Erling after this. You can try and catch up with them while they're still here or get in touch with them when they're back in the UK. There obviously is a date after which the report will be finalised and we'll be getting it to Exco, so don't wait around too much if you've got questions or ideas that you would like to see reflected in that report. And we will make sure that they are incorporated into what is presented to Exco in June. For now, I'd just like to thank you all for making time to come here, for the really thoughtful questions, and to say that we will continue to engage on a number of telecom subjects through the Development and Commercial Services Directorate, but also obviously via Legislative Assembly as questions are raised and things like that as well. So please don't be strangers if you've got questions or if you just want to know where we're at on things. You can drop us a line and we will be very, very happy to update you. We also regularly update the Technology Development Group, so if you're represented, your sector is represented on there, then you can look to your reps to give you update on what we're doing. In the meantime, thank you very much and good night. Thank you.